Tax Resolution Ninja Show, where we feature the top experts on all things tax to help you understand, navigate, and resolve all your tax-related issues. Now, let's get started with the show.
Hi, I'm Alan Rolnick, the host of the Tax Resolution Ninja Show, where we feature guests and talk about issues from all walks of life, from taxes to health to economics, personal finance, sales and marketing, employment, and many more. Please listen to our past episodes with Alex Kuhn and Jerry Nyland. This episode is brought to you by Alan Rolnick, the Tax Resolution Ninja, and Tri-State Tax Resolution. Do you owe the IRS money or have not filed the tax return for more than 2 years? The IRS is going to look for you. They want to throw you a party, and this party is not to celebrate your birthday, anniversary, engagement, or wedding. This party is being made to levy your wages up to 90%, take your Social Security check up to 85%, seize your bank account and other assets that you own, and revoke your passport. They are not doing this because they like. To stop this party in its tracks, you need to call the Tax Resolution Ninja at 718-841-7317. Tax Resolution Ninja runs a tax emergency room that helps people and businesses permanently resolve their tax problems. Tax Resolution will do the heavy lifting for you and will never have to speak. You will never have to speak to an IRS agent. You owe the IRS money, give Alan Rolnick, the Tax Resolution Ninja, a call. I will resolve your tax problem permanently, and you will not have to go to any party that the IRS is throwing. To stop the party, call the Tax Resolution Ninja at 718-841-7317. I have as my guest today Nina Kaufman. Nina is an attorney and the owner of Business Exponential. Nina understands firsthand that running an expertise-based service business has unique challenges. Over the past 25 years, she has worked with thousands of business professionals as an award-winning business attorney, strategist, and media resource to grow their businesses stronger and smarter. And it's why she created her coaching firm, Business Exponential. Nina provides the education and support she wishes she had when she tried to go alone and failed with her first law business. As she says, I can't get those 12 years back, but I can pay them forward to other business professionals. Nina, thank you for joining me. I really appreciate you taking.
You are so welcome, Alan. Thank you for having me here. It's great to be with you.
Okay. So in my introduction, we mentioned that your first law practice failed.
Yeah.
Okay. So what do you wish you knew that you know now?
Oh, well, there is so much. But I think one of the biggest lessons that I took away from it was that the business is not just about what can I, Nina, do? What is the work that I can do? That when you're creating a business, you're really creating an engine. And for a lot of solo professionals, they are the engine. They are doing the work. They are doing the management. They are doing the bill paying. They are maybe doing some strategy, but they're not ever creating anything that can ultimately get off their shoulders. And that's one of the challenges that there are like 27 million business owners in this country, and the vast, vast, vast majority of those, close to 80%, are solo owned. So if you don't have a way for that engine to run when you're not there, then your income is limited. It's like musical chairs. The music stops. You know, are you sitting on a chair or are you falling on the ground? And that's a real challenge and a peril for a lot of these businesses, especially when we're dealing with something like COVID-19 and pandemics and shutdowns, so many things that hit your business. If you don't have a way, if you're harmed, you know, if you get sick, so many ways for your business to fail. And it's a very, very fragile thing. I didn't realize that then, and I didn't build it in a way that I am now to run itself, to really run with the systems.
Right. So how does your business run? Run without you.
One of the ways that it runs without me certainly is by having a team of people who do a lot of that support work. So those things can go on in the background without needing me to step in and take care of that. One of the ways a business can run without you is by creating courses and products, ways that you can share your information without having to be there one-to-one. Now, certainly for a lot of providers, they say, well, I am the business. This is how I run. Well, one of the things that they can start to do is map out how they serve their clients. And that's it's a multi-layered process. It's not just the tasks, but also what are the values that you bring. What is the environment you want? You know, how do you want clients to feel when you're talking on the phone with them? All of those things can be mapped out and ultimately trained to somebody else, to the right person, not just any person off the street, but finding the right people so that you're not the one doing the service delivery all the time.
So you have people working for you, or are you outsourcing a lot of the things that you're doing?
Yeah, right now it's working with collaborative partners in an outsourced way. So not having employees, but working with, I like working with an A team. So being able to reach out to other people who have experience in other areas or have experience in my areas, but can step in, do a lot of the heavy lifting so that I can be out and in front and on shows like yours.
So you're actually doing the triaging as to where to send your clients when they've got a problem.
Well, when clients come in, I mean, there are different steps in the process where I may gather help. So for example, if I am, coaching with a client, that is something that I may do one-on-one with them. But if I'm creating an operating agreement, then I may be working with other attorneys to create those initial drafts, because I do have a system for gathering the information in a way that they can also take that on without my needing to be part of that specific part of the process.
Yeah, and I sort of have the same problem. I'm by myself. I'm the mm-hmm. I'm the cook, the bottle washer, the cleaner, and everything.
Exactly.
Else. So I'm trying to outsource a lot of those things that I do, so I don't have to be around, necessarily be around to handle it.
Right, or just to free you up to do the higher level things within that your business absolutely needs, instead of, the bottle washing.
Right, and I also try and set up a coaching program where I guide the people as to what they should be doing. Mm-hmm. Be actually physically doing the work, so I'm still working on it, but we're gonna get there at some point.
Exactly, and that way, it's something that I talk about. When working with my clients, especially the coaching clients, I have a kind of a formula that I use. It's an acronym called SCALE, SCALE, and one of the L in SCALE is leverage, and it's leveraging your time. So the very act of creating a group coaching program is indeed one of the things to be looking at as a way to earn, if you're going to put in time, can you earn more from it?
So there's a common myth about running a successful business that you would like to debunk. What is it?
I think, and I have friends in entrepreneurial circles who will smack me. I have one, Ramon Ray, he sent me a video saying, so and such said, I think it was Damon John or somebody said, not everyone can be an entrepreneur. And he completely disagrees, my friend Ramon. But I would have to agree that it is, the myth that anyone can start a business and anyone can run it successfully can take people down the wrong path. Not everyone is necessarily cut out to be entrepreneurial, because it takes a lot of self-motivation. So for people who need a great deal of structure, people who prefer having others around or others that are kind of ready-made as a community, it is very, very difficult in those early stages to, forgive me, and of course my phone went off. And everything says potential spam these days. So not everyone is cut out for business ownership. It is a very, very challenging ride, and a myth that, I'm just going to start something. I'll throw up a web page and that'll be fine. No, it isn't. It isn't. There really is deeper thought that can and should be brought into that conversation, because if you have family, if you have a significant other, if there are obligations that you need to meet to others, it's really important to know your numbers, and many business owners don't. So it's not as easy as all of the rags to riches stories tell you.
Yeah, when you and I were going to school, the thing was that they taught us, just hang out your shingle. And everything will be all right. They'll just come to you.
Oh, if that. I mean, that's the thing. When I was in law school, they taught you nothing about the business skills, nothing about how do you attract clients, nothing about what are good ways to serve them, and nothing about how do you figure out all the technology in your business. I mean, and nothing about running a business. Absolutely nothing. So, a lot of people are self-taught. And it's, when you think, I can do it alone. It first of all, it's lonely to do it alone. And most people do better with the influence of other ideas, other knowledge base, just and other support to know that you're not alone. It can be a very, very lonely ride when, spouse, family, whoever it is, don't understand. If you're passionate about it, the sacrifices that you're making and the sacrifices that they're making so you can make that sacrifice.
The reality is that it's taken me a very, very long time to realize this. I used to think that, oh yeah, I can do this, I can do that. Can't do it all. Not it's just not possible. Mm-hmm. And what happens is your clients don't get responded to quickly enough. And you start to fall very far behind. You just can't do it all.
You know, and that is what I hear from the clients I'm coaching. That's among the top three reasons that clients get angry and they quit, they terminate your contract, they want to move on. They're not getting responded to
right. What
they think is quickly enough. And that's where, again, thinking through, what are the expectations you're setting with your clients? How are you responding to them? You know, a response could simply be, hey, I'm really swamped, I'll get back to you on Friday. But then you have to keep that micro commitment on Friday of getting back to them and letting them know where things stand. Right. And if you are so overwhelmed that there's no possible way that you can get back to them, then it's really helpful to look deeper into what other kind of support might you need so that you're not so overwhelmed, you know, because you're not going to be able to grow. You will have reached capacity at that point.
Right. Absolutely. I mean, it's very, in service businesses, it's very easy to reach capacity in a short period of time.
Oh, yes.
You know, it doesn't take all that much.
No. You know, I mean, how many hours in the day are you going to work? Oh, I'm going to work 15 hours a day. Yeah. You know what? That's really sexy for about 12 minutes.
Right. Because, you know, your body gets tired. I mean, you know, you gotta sleep sometime,
kid. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. You know, and then also as you go through different stages in life, you have different needs, you have different desires, right. That there are other things you want to be doing other than just the glory days of, I'm working 15 hours a day.
It's no picnic. I know the situation. Okay. So what are some of the ways that you've gotten clients to confront the challenges in their businesses?
Well, I think one of the ways is, and particularly it's, you know, when I'm coaching them, we get back to what is their real vision for the business? You know, we just talked about working 15-hour days. That's all well and good, but in the service of what? Where is the business meant to be taking you? And it goes back to what I originally said about the business being the engine. What do you want this way of earning money to do for you? If it's just, well, I want to earn a living, there might be other easier ways to earn a living if you are valuing, let's say, family time or want more travel time. To go back to why they're in it, again, because it can be such a difficult road, can remind them of, okay, right, this is why I started this. It was to help a group of people. It's to protect other people's businesses. Whatever that thing may be, it brings them back up to the higher place where they were when they first started, instead of getting bogged down into the day-to-day challenges. And it's when we're stuck in that day-to-day grind that not only do they lose kind of sight of the big strategy, but they also lose enthusiasm for the big picture. So it's, the same way, you know, any kind of meditation teacher would tell you, you know, take a few minutes, take a few deep breaths, walk around the block, get your head clear, because there's so much negativity that can come from so many sources that you get stuck in that place very, very easily. And it's hard to get out often on your own.
It is. It's, I try to get up off the chair, you know, like maybe once every hour and a half, you know, just so I don't go nuts. Mm-hmm. You know, a friend of mine, did a lot of his work, standing up because it was just healthier for him to do.
Yeah, can be. You hear about people on these treadmill desks and things like that. I don't know how I would type on a computer on a treadmill desk, but absolutely. They, you know, say sitting is, if you ever go to a personal development conference or, you know, quasi, you know, small business entrepreneurship conference, you'll often find that the leader will ask people to stand up, turn to the left, turn to the right, give someone a high five, pat yourself on the back. And they're not just doing that to be a cheerleader to the 1,000 people in the room. They're doing that because neuroscience and neurobiology has taught us that when an object, you know, an object at rest, physics too, when an object at rest tends to stay at rest. So when you change your state by standing up, turning, having physical contact, pre-COVID with other people, it fires off something different in your brain. And with that neuro firing, more creative ideas come. Again, you don't get stuck in the same neural paths. That's one of the reasons they do it.
And it's, you know, especially now, I mean, a lot of us have left our offices basically since, you know, it's almost a year already. And it's got to be driving people. It's got to be driving people crazy. You know, I don't know what to do sometimes. You know, I've been working in my house for quite a number of years already. Mm-hmm. But I would get out and do some shopping or anything and just to get away from this stuff for a little bit.
Oh, sure. Well, you know, even if you were in an office, it would be important to be able to take a break, again, walk around. That's why the old-fashioned water cooler in the old corporations was so great, because it did give people a chance to get up from the desk, to physically move to the water cooler. They're drinking water, which is healthy,
right?
And they're interacting with other people. Maybe they're hearing about other things that are going on in the company. They're getting fresh ideas. It's being part of a community. It's belonging. And all of the things are very important to us as human beings, you know, as a species. It's so important to us. We don't often realize that, and the toll that this enforced isolation can take. So yeah, it's really, you know, if you want to schedule in your grocery shopping and you have the flexibility to do it, that's one of the beautiful things about having your own business.
Right,
you can do that.
Absolutely, but I don't do that. You know, it's last year I haven't done it. I won't go into the supermarket. I just won't do it because. Mm-hmm. You know, because I don't want to get sick like everybody else doesn't want to get sick.
Right.
You know?
Right.
So I've basically been home, except to get my wife back and forth to work. Basically not going anywhere.
Mm-hmm. Well, as I say, you know, and that's where even just a walk around the block, a walk around the apartment, yoga stretches. You know, one of my favorite shows has become Aerial America on the Smithsonian Channel, because for 1 hour, I'm getting an overhead view of, I don't know, Vermont or Idaho, and I'm learning some really interesting historical stuff, but it's also visually beautiful. So when we're closed in a space and often can't get out, having a visual image of a horizon and an extended vista can do a lot to replenish ourselves.
Yeah, I mean, I'm lucky in the sense that I have a porch that I can go out
onto. Terrific.
Onto that, you know, every if it's not too cold, not too cold, I'll stand out there for a few minutes and just
bring out your coffee and sit, enjoy the birds. Sure.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So
yep.
We do that. So the pandemic is, how has the pandemic changed your thinking on small business survival?
Oof. Well, I'll tell you, it has really made it so clear how deeply people need to understand how they earn money. You know, when times are good and money's coming in, you don't think about, oh, all the expenses. You're not, you know, you're maybe papering over mistakes. You may be letting things slide for a while. But when you're forced to really pare down and say, well, what is the business model that works best here? It's really helpful to run that by the numbers and to understand not just what are you earning, but also, and it's very hard for professional service providers to say, what are your labor costs? You know, like, well, I work for myself. What do you mean labor? I don't have any labor costs. It's just me. Well, if you were to hire out, what would that cost? And are you earning enough from your engagements to make it worth it? Is, you know, do you need to change your pricing? Have you been saying, oh, well, I'll do this for you for $500 when it actually might take $1,000 worth of time. And if it does, that's a problem, because you're not earning enough to feed the rest of your business. And what's the rest of your business? It's all of those, you know, the fixed costs. Maybe you have the internet. Maybe you do have an office. You know, any of the software programs that, you know, ka-ching, ka-ching, every month you're on a platform for this and a platform for that. And no, it's only $35, but you got 20 of those and you're talking some money. Right. So really seeing what are you using? Are you using it effectively? Again, it's hard to examine those things just by yourself, which is why a coach or just an outside pair of eyes is so helpful. But I think just being more mindful of that, What are you earning? What should you be charging? Are you working effectively and efficiently with your clients so that if you want to charge less, it actually can make sense? And that's where automation can come in terms of, let's say, certain information gathering. So I think that's an aspect of survival. I mean, this is something we would never, ever have thought that, an outside agency would say, you must close and stay closed. I don't work with people in the hospitality or restaurant industry, and it's got to be absolutely heartbreaking. The number of people who have invested their life savings into those businesses, and margins are already thin. So it goes back to, what are your margins normally? What are you earning? Are you just about breaking even? Why does that matter? It matters because you need to be able to support yourself and your family from what you're doing.
Many of my wife's patients are in the TV production. Entertainment.
Mm-hmm.
Sector, and they are just dying. I mean.
Oh yeah, my husband's an actor. I know it. I know.
Yeah.
That, there's nothing going on other than, hey, you want to act in something where we all do it by Zoom?
Right.
No. Yeah. No.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They are doing some of the TV shows that we see on television, and they've been shut down for weeks at a time.
Mm-hmm.
Because of COVID. And then when they do go to work, it's a big deal because they got to follow all the regulations.
Oh, sure.
To prevent somebody from getting it. Mm-hmm. And God forbid, if somebody gets it, you're shut down
yep.
again.
Yep.
So, I mean, it costs them a small fortune. And you understand, you may not like it, but you understand why our TV schedule, the regular TV schedules, they're showing repeats.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
It's not a great situation, and I think we're going to be stuck for another year. Even with the vaccine.
With the vaccine, you may be right. I mean, people are nervous enough about going out and getting out, as you say, about right. Going out to the supermarkets. Right. It's interesting. There are for a lot of the professional service providers that I work with, from that perspective, COVID wasn't as big a deal. They were already working from home, or they were already able to work remotely, work off their laptop, because they're marketers, they're strategists, they're in communications. They didn't always, that they had the network so that they could work from anywhere, essentially. So in that sense, that didn't harm their business. In fact, it helped make them more efficient. But one of the things that did happen is when they're working with larger clients, that sales cycle got extended and extended and extended. Right. So there's less to feed to the smaller businesses. And that's been hard.
And I got a colleague that she got some big, she got a big offer to do a sales presentation, and they wanted her to come into the facility.
Mm-hmm.
She said, "Oh, no, I'm not doing it. I'll do it.
Wow. Okay.
I'll do it. Through Zoom.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not coming into the facility." It was a big, right. Big contract that she lost. Sometimes you just got to do what you got to do.
Yeah. And people have different, and that's the thing about business too. There's a different sense of risk tolerance. Some people, my sister-in-law won't go anywhere without two masks. Me, I'm not as, not quite as particular, and thankfully very healthy. But also in business too, when you think about, am I going to be hiring a lot of staff? Or, one of the reasons I've chosen to work with independent contractors, and because I know I can vet them properly as independent right. contractors, not as employees,
right.
is that as I'm watching the trends in my business, I want the ability to expand and contract at will without having that fixed cost of employees. And given what I do, I am able to fill that need. I mean, not every business can, but also, taking on employees and saying, yeah, we're going to provide for you until we have to fire you. That's hard for business owners, right. particularly service providers who, they're in a people business. They're in the business of service. So to hire someone and then say 4 months later, through no fault of that other person, we got to let you go. That's one of the hardest conversations any business owner ever has.
Right.
Is having to fire an employee.
Right.
Or even let's say a well-regarded employee.
Right. Right.
Not somebody who was a jerk.
And it was somebody that we had a layoff.
Mm-hmm.
We just couldn't carry it. I mean,
sure.
Just just wasn't possible.
Exactly.
And you know, and we hired him, we laid him off until the governor said that we can go back, you know, open up again. Mm-hmm. You know, so it worked out, you know, and in the end it worked out, but
a lot of people.
That's right.
Yeah.
It hasn't for a lot of people. I have an attorney friend of mine who, you know, recently built up his staff, and all of a sudden he's got to lay these people that he hired. He's got to lay them off because just can't support it.
Right.
So, you know, it hasn't been easy. So we talked about vetting people that work for you. Mm-hmm. How do you do that?
Oh, great question. The very first step is I am crystal clear about what I need done and what kind of skills or aptitudes I'm looking for. So it may be, you know, whether it's facility with a particular program or platform. I'm also clear about the results or the turnaround time that I want from specific projects. And I think from there, it's also looking at, you know, not just the pedigree, because that doesn't always tell you everything. But in any kind of interview, asking the open-ended questions of how have you solved a problem like, you know, the one I'm working on, just to get a sense of, have they had experience with it? What are they, you know, what's their creative thinking behind all of this? And it's important to me for people to, you know, and I know also what my value code is in terms of integrity, commitment, you know, willing to admit to mistakes or willingness to, you know, come back and make something better if it wasn't quite right. Those are all important to me as well. So I think it's, wasn't Socrates, but it was, you know, ancient Greek, know thyself. that's the first thing is really, you know, for me, knowing really, really, really what I need, not just, oh my God, I'm overwhelmed. Let me find a warm body and throw them at the problem. That never works well.
How do you avoid the questions that you shouldn't be asking?
What, like, how old are you? And are you thinking of getting pregnant? And
Yeah.
Well, one of the ways I have avoided it, and it factors into my risk calculation, is that I'm working with independent contractors. So if I need something done within, you know, 2 weeks, 2 months, whatever that is, or I need this kind of turnaround time on a regular basis, can you do that? If I'm working with an independent contractor, I don't care that they did it specifically between 9 a.m. and 1 a.m. or, you know, 1 p.m. on a Wednesday necessarily, unless that's the requirement of the assignment. So if they're pregnant, who cares? You know, if they're going to have a baby, so be it. But, you know, part of it is also hearing from them. You know, I had one vendor who was very candid. She said, I would love to work on this. I'm 8.5 months pregnant. So she volunteered that
right, in
terms of, but it has to go, it goes back to something very objective, which is, what is your availability to do this work within the time frame?
Supposing it's an employee situation, you know, you need somebody actually physically there from 9 to 5,
right?
Mm-hmm. And you see the I guess mostly women.
Women are the only ones who get pregnant. So yes.
Oh, I watched the show the other night where there was a female transitioning, mm-hmm, transitioning into a male.
Oh,
And apparently he hadn't gone the whole way yet, and he found himself pregnant.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So it was an interesting.
I don't know what television you're watching, but okay.
No, it actually it was a network. It was a network show. Mm-hmm. It was really, really very interesting. You know, they had other illnesses going along with it, so it was the decision whether to terminate the pregnancy. Or,
oh, dear. Ugh. All right. I didn't realize the tax resolution ninja was going to go in that direction, but okay. But yeah, you asked some really good questions about, you know, what do you do when you have a young workforce and they, you know, get pregnant or need family leave? And, you know, a lot of that depends on, you know, your business. It absolutely, anyone wanting to take on employees, I mean, I don't know how wide your range here is here. But any state, anyone wanting to take on employees, absolutely should be talking to an employment attorney and getting the support to know what you can and cannot do. Because those employment laws will kick you sideways if you don't abide by them. And New York City, where I am, is particularly strong, let's say, in having employee friendly policies.
Yeah.
So that is absolutely something. But if it is a requirement of the job that you have to be there, then that can be a countervailing force, that it's not just something that can be done remotely. And so that would not, you know, depending on the circumstance, might not be considered an accommodation that you would need to make.
One last question.
Sure.
So when you don't do what you're doing, what are you doing?
What am I doing? Well, I'll tell you what I was doing pre-COVID, and I miss terribly. And now my knees are a mess. My husband and I would run 5K races. So it's about 3.5 miles. And we would do that once or twice a month between, I don't know, March and December. We used to do that regularly for years. And we love it because it's usually you're running for a good cause. So you're happy to be there. Everyone showing up for a race, there's a wonderful energy of enthusiasm and excitement. Again, being together, but also kind of the self-competitive aspect of it. As a former college DJ, I know I've got my playlist lined up on my iPod, so that makes me happy. And those were some of the things we've done. But more recently, I think it's just trying to enjoy the outdoors as much as we can. Being in New York City, we have been able to get to, you know, the East River, to Central Park, to Long Beach, you know, on Long Island. Right. So just balancing the indoorsness with being outdoors has been really important.
Nina, thank you very much. I really
thank you, Alan. Wonderful to talk to you.
I appreciate you taking the time to do this. And we'll talk again soon.
All right. Thank you very much.
Listen to my previous episodes, and we'll see you next week.
Thanks for listening to the Tax Resolution Ninja Show. Be sure to click subscribe to get updates on our latest episodes.